At MIT, we've had demonstrations where they invite hundreds and sometimes thousands of people who aren't from MIT, who have a history of aggression and of agitation. We get alerts from our campus police to avoid certain areas on campus because of how bad they get.
You know, I was talking to a professor at Harvard recently about the anti-Semitism problem, and what he said to me was, you know, I hear what you're saying, but I've spoken to many Jewish students who said anti-Semitism isn't a problem at all. You know, the truth is that I believe him, right? If you are not Israeli and not visibly Jewish and don't speak out for Israel, I could probably go about my life without experiencing any issues at all.
There's a survey that reports that only 5% of Jews are anti-Zionist. What happens is, the reason we see so many of them is because these pro-Hamas protesters will find the Jew and be like, you're Jewish, you're an anti-Zionist, take the microphone. Tokenize yourself.
Hello and welcome to the State of a Nation podcast. I'm Alon Levy. Today we're going to do something completely new. We are taking the podcast on the road, here filming a live episode in Atlanta, Georgia, as part of the Hillel International Israel Summit, with hundreds of student leaders from across the United States have come to Atlanta to talk about the major problems that they're facing, not just those that Israel is facing directly. Over 100 years ago, on universities around the United States, there was a popular song. It went like this. Oh, Harvard's run by millionaires, and Yale is run by booze. Cornell is run by farmers' sons. Columbia's run by
Jews.
By Jews. It's been over 100 years. The famous quotas have come and gone, and Jews have been phenomenally overrepresented and really punching above their weight at elite institutions across the United States, making their mark on those institutions and on American society more generally. But in recent years, and especially since October 7th, something has changed, and American Jewish students have experienced a wave of anti-Semitism, not just anti-Israel activity, as if we could separate them, proper anti-Semitism. And of course, culminating in that famous moment, the hearing before the House, where the three presidents of three universities were asked whether calling for the genocide of the Jews violated their hate speech provisions, and they said it depended on the context. Well, joining me here today are three students from Harvard, Cornell, and MIT. We didn't quite get the trifecta to recreate the congressional hearing. We're going to have a discussion. I want to understand what's going on American campuses, how bad the situation is, because I'm trying to speak to American audiences, trying to address specifically elite opinion in the United States, and I'm finding myself increasingly baffled by what is going on. So I want, in the next half hour, you to help me understand a little bit what's going on.
Breaking news out of Israel this morning.
Shocking hostage taking.
Hundreds of Israelis are dead.
I want to bring an Israeli government spokesman.
What happens when the four-day pause?
How do you resolve this?
Where does this go?
So joining me here, not in the State of a Nation podcast, instead in Atlanta, Georgia, Charlie Kovit from Harvard University, Talia Draw from Cornell University, and Maya Makarovsky, MIT. Audience, give them a round of applause. As a spokesman, my job is to amplify the government's message, but sometimes I criticize them, okay? The defense minister said that Israel is fighting a war on seven fronts. We're being attacked from Gaza, Yemen, Judea and Samaria, Syria, Lebanon, Iraq, Iran, but he missed one out. We're being attacked on eight fronts. And the eighth front is the diaspora, and particularly university campuses. How bad is it? Because Israelis have been watching these scenes on TV, and it's not clear whether we're watching, you know, a highlights reel of particularly egregious incidents, or whether something really rotten and scary is happening.
I guess I'll start by saying that I think that what the last few months have shown us is that there's sort of this obsession, right, with Israel on college campuses. And I think that that's something that has very little to do with what's happening in Gaza, right? It has nothing to do with any specific Israeli policy around settlements or around the judicial reform or the treatment of Arab citizens. It's an issue with Israel itself. And I think that what showed us that was at Harvard, the Palestine Solidarity Committee released a statement on October 8th, holding Israel wholly responsible for what had happened the day before.
That would be called victim blaming in any other context.
Right, right. And I think that what we saw from that was, this was before, right? I mean, there were still Hamas terrorists inside of Israel. The bombing of Gaza hadn't started.
Right, 4 days to clear out the terrorists who infiltrated.
Right, right. And you were already seeing protests against Israel. So I think what we saw is what's happening on these campuses has very little to do with what's actually happening on the ground.
So what sort of incidents have you personally witnessed on campus? And how do they make you feel? I mean, do they genuinely make you feel unsafe? Or it's a few people chanting a few stupid slogans and it's a bit uncomfortable, but never mind, we'll get over this too.
At MIT, we've had demonstrations where they invite hundreds and sometimes thousands of people who aren't from MIT, who have a history of aggression and of agitation. We get alerts from our campus police to avoid certain areas on campus because of how bad they get. So I feel completely unsafe when situations like that happen.
Sorry, just backtrack. Campus police are telling you not to approach certain areas on campus?
Yes.
Well, these are now Jew-free zones on the campus of MIT?
I guess that's the result.
Because what? What might happen?
I mean, they are inviting, that you can see pictures and scenes of hundreds, sometimes even thousands in some of the protests, of non-MIT people on MIT's campus, blockading hallways and going to the main parts of campus.
Has there been physical violence?
There has been some scrimmages. It hasn't been anything dramatic, but that's because, you know, we all take measures to not go to these areas. It shouldn't be that on a regular Thursday, instead of going to class, I have to change my route because the police told me to avoid a certain area on campus.
And is this examples of virulent, hateful, anti-Israel protests, and we can have an argument about the connection to anti-Semitism, and we will in a second, or are there examples of what you would call classic anti-Semitism that seem almost divorced from the Israel context altogether? What are you seeing?
I will say at Cornell, the prevalence of anti-Israel activity absolutely led to just sheer, on its face, anti-Semitism. In the beginning, on October 8th, I think it was, a Cornell professor had exclaimed that he was exhilarated and energized by the Hamas attacks.
I remember that.
Shortly thereafter, I think it was 3 weeks later, a junior at Cornell that actually lived right down the street from me posted on an anonymous posting platform saying, "We are going to rape all Jewish women, come to your dorms and kill you. We are going to shoot up the kosher dining hall and bomb the Center for Jewish Living." And so we had sheer...
He was a student.
It was a student. He's now arrested and in jail. But this kind of anti-Israel environment absolutely fosters sheer anti-Semitism. And you saw it at Harvard, too.
I mean, for sure. I mean, just the other day, a group called Faculty and Staff for Justice in Palestine released this cartoon, which essentially had a Star of David on it with a dollar sign in the middle. Lynching Muhammad Ali and the Egyptian president Nasser.
Yeah, that's proper 1930s stuff.
Right, and this is, it actually is in a book called Anti-Semitism and the Far Left.
Well, at least you know they've been to the library.
Right, right. And these are not students. I mean, this is a group with around 110 faculty members.
Right, so that's another thing I want to understand. Is what we're witnessing on campuses a question of students who've drunk this anti-Israel Kool-Aid and this is the latest trendy cause, or is it coming from faculty and the administrative staff as well?
I don't think you can group faculty and administrators together. I think administrators are tasked with a really hard job of managing the public eye while also managing their faculty. And a lot of faculty, at least at Cornell, are extremely, extremely anti-Israel. Some of my own professors actually wrote an op-ed in Al Jazeera because, you know, they couldn't get into actual media outlets.
No comment.
They're not going to be on the podcast next week?
Maybe the week after.
But anti-Israel faculty absolutely do influence radicalized students, empowering them, attending their rallies, speaking at them, and legitimizing their claims.
When you say anti-Israel, I mean, I was at Cambridge 10 years ago. I remember my first seminar on the Middle East. Jewish professor, it often is, calling Israel a settler colonial state. When you say anti-Israel, what is happening? I mean, are they being generally critical about Israel? Are they framing Israel in the context of frameworks and paradigms that you think are false? Or is this spilling into actual political activism and agitation?
I mean, I think that they have a chant that they say at their protest that really gives you the answer to that question. You know, the line from the river to the sea, Palestine will be free, right, is one that we hear often. But at Harvard, they also say something in Arabic, which is, and I'm going to butcher the pronunciation, but it's min el maya el maya, falastina rabia. So from water to water, Palestine is Arab. And I think that
they
really...
They said the quiet part out loud.
Right.
About what they mean by right. From the river to the sea.
Right. We've been saying for months, this is what they mean. And now they're actually telling us with that sort of code switch, this is what we mean.
That's amazing you say that, that sometimes your fellow students do a better job making the case for you about why that movement is so awful. Because I have the same thing where every time a Hamas spokesman gets interviewed on TV, I say yes, because they always make the case for me better than I possibly could about why it's an evil, genocidal terrorist organization. And here you have students on campus saying, yeah, we're not talking about from the river to the sea. We will have a state of democracy and equality and a nice liberal kumbaya. They're saying, yeah, Palestine will be Arab and the Jews are presumably going to go in the sea, which is nice in the summer months, not so much so in the winter. So, I mean, I want to understand, have you felt... Okay, we know that there's this problem of anti-Israel activism, anti-Semitism on campus as well. Have you felt personally betrayed by people you thought were your friends and allies before October 7th, and then October 7th happened, you woke up, you check your phone, you go, oh my God, what just happened? And then you didn't get the reaction from friends and allies that you thought. Did you have that awakening moment?
Yeah, we at MIT, I think people are a little afraid to support Israel, especially if you're not Jewish and if you're not Israeli. We've had instances of doxing members of the community who support Israel. We've had a bounty that was placed.
What do you mean they're doxed?
There's Twitter threads kind of exposing Zionists. One student had a bounty put on him, and he gets many death threats.
So sort of what, outing them as Zionists? Or,
yeah.
Or giving like personal information, addresses, and that sort of thing?
It was, the bounty was for identification to find out the information. Yeah, it's really scary. So I think that and you know, every day when you have people chanting at you, like Intifada, Intifada, it kind of becomes scary to come out as someone who does support Israel if you're an ally, if you're not a Jewish or Israeli student.
But did you have people you thought, or your friends, or broadly identified with your values or your movements, who you were then tearing your hair out that they were celebrating or denying or downplaying the atrocities? I don't mean just the people who are scared to speak out. I mean the people who have gone full in for the other side.
So I think university campuses are a microcosm of the broader world. And like the broader world, women's organizations on our campuses were actually saying, like, free Palestine on October 8th. We were like, hey guys, I think you're missing all of the brutally horrific things that they've done to women over the past 24 hours. And they were like, no.
And are still doing, by the way, to the hostages who are still trapped in the Hamas terror dungeons that we fear are being sexually abused and raped right now.
Right, or LGBTQ liaisons on the student assembly introducing resolutions glorifying Hamas on October 11th.
Okay, so help me actually, I was gonna ask this slightly later on, but let's bring this up. I mean, we often deride the Queers for Palestine movement as, you know, chickens for KFC or whatever. And what a lot of people in Israel have a difficulty understanding is, look, obviously, Israel is the best place for miles and miles and miles around to be LGBT. If you were in Gaza, you would be thrown out of a window, best case, thrown off a roof, worst case. These are virulently homophobic societies that hate gay people, that persecute them. How are you taking their side? And we go, it's intersectionality. I don't understand it. So, like, explain to me why it is that these people are so self-evidently acting against their own interests and taking the side of the people who would gladly persecute them instead of taking the side of a society that flawed, imperfect, blah, 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 but is obviously on their side of that issue.
I mean, I think this is where, you know, disinformation really becomes relevant. I mean, there was a post that went pretty viral, which was a Palestinian essentially saying, it doesn't matter that I'm gay and Palestinian, because if I was in Israel, they would kill me for being Palestinian. And, you know, I wanted to tell whoever posted that, that just a few days ago, right, there was a Palestinian that was granted asylum in Israel who was gay and from the West Bank. And you'll see posts, you know, mentioning that Israel has not yet legalized gay marriage, you know, as if that would be, right, a valid criticism, you know, of America 20 years ago, which had not even, you know, legalized gay marriage. So I think that there really is sort of a weaponization, right? I mean, every fault is sort of portrayed as, right, as Israel being sort of the embodiment of all evil.
But it's not just a question of misinformation that it's easy to deride them and say they're stupid, they don't understand, they don't really know. Here, let's force feed them more facts. I'm trying to understand the matrix of this ideology that divides the world into oppressors, oppressed, and then tries to create this like alliance of oppressed that takes Hamas and gay people and reproductive justice, right? And puts them all in the same, like, help me understand this ideology. I don't understand this intellectual climate that I'm now having to try to cut through in order to put Israel's message and get it across.
So I think you just said it yourself. Like, there's this oppressor-oppressed mentality.
It really is as simple as that.
And it's very simple and naive, and they say our struggles are interconnected. And they appeal to people's emotions. And in doing so, when you start bringing up facts, you look like a horrible person because you're not validating their emotions, which is now what you have to be doing to kind of convey a point. You have to say, well, I understand, but at the same time, you would be thrown off a roof. They would say, well, you hate Palestinians and gay people now, and everyone else.
But where did this ideology come from? How did the universities begin to see everything through this lens that divides the world in this way, where Hamas somehow seems like the natural ally of the LGBT community rather than, you know, the country with the biggest gay pride parade for thousands of miles around? Where did this ideology come from?
I mean, I think that regardless of one's views on Israel, right, and the conflict, what I think many of these students have done a very good job of doing is sort of looking at the conflict through an American lens. So saying you have one side that are these white oppressors and settler colonialists and the other side that are people of color that are oppressed. I mean, I was at a protest, I was observing a protest a few weeks ago where in the same sentence in which they were talking about the bombing of Gaza, they were also talking about healthcare costs in the United States. And it almost is laughable, right? As if there's any connection between Gaza.
What's the connection?
I mean, they're based, I mean, I guess you'd have to ask them that, but they would make the claim.
They didn't want to come on the podcast, we tried.
Right, I mean, they would make the claim, they say that all systems of oppression are interlinked, but not just that, that Israel, right, is sort of the original evil. I mean, it really is this almost classic anti-Semitic stereotype, right, where the Jews are scapegoated, right? They talk about how Israel is responsible for police violence, and Israel is responsible for, you know, U.S. campaigns overseas, right? It really, Israel is sort of portrayed as the source of anything that's wrong here.
And I think that's where we find the nexus between it being just anti-Israel and being explicitly anti-Semitic. It's not a question of it. They're protesting against Israel, they're critical of Israeli government policies, and somehow it spills over into anti-Semitism. It's that when you latch onto Israel and say, it's at fault for everything. It's at fault for gun violence and reproductive injustice and healthcare costs, and everything comes down to Israel, that you see the same patterns of how people throughout history have looked at the Jews and blamed them. I mean, am I being paranoid, or is this really what is happening on American campuses right now?
I mean, I saw someone post on Instagram the other day a video of a rat on the subway in New York and said, we don't take care of our subways because we're sending billions of dollars to Israel, right? I mean, it really is laughable, this idea that there's rats on the subway because of Israel.
What do you think?
I think there's been a complete normalization of anti-Israel hate, and that's why it's, you know, allowed to continue, and it's just a new form of anti-Semitism, and the reason why it's given the same platform that other things get, even though it's hate speech and hate conduct, it's been normalized. So you can't, they're not letting you pinpoint and say this is anti-Semitism. They've disguised it as anti-Israel hate.
Have any of you read the book Anti-Judaism by David Nirenberg? It's okay to say no. I think it's one of the most important books that's been written in recent years. He looks at the history of the Western world and says, look, anti-Semitism isn't this aberration that popped up, or he calls it anti-Judaism, okay? Isn't this aberration that popped up every once in a while when Western societies decided they didn't hate the Jew, that they hated the Jews? It was an integral part of the way that the whole Western intellectual edifice has been constructed. What he says is this.
societies throughout history have always used Judaism, not real Judaism, but whatever they imagined it to be, as like the contra against which they defined themselves. It was whatever evil they thought they were fighting against. If they were religious, the Jews were godless. If they were secular, the Jews were religious. Capitalist, communist, communist, capitalist, etc., etc. And he says you're having this phenomenon even across 300 years of history in medieval Europe, when there are no Jews in Western Europe, people keep calling each other Jews and Judaizers, because that's just the mechanism through which they interpret things. And that's really been on my mind now as I see what's been happening on Western campuses as well. And why you have that connection between anti-Israel sentiment and anti-Semitism, because it's so obsessive and it latches on and it's all-encompassing, it's an ideology. And I'm wondering, do you see any hope of fighting against this? Because, I mean, if this is true, if what I'm saying is true and I'm not being alarmist, then it's not enough to just throw facts at people and say, ha-ha, Birthright taught me that 64% of... It's not enough to throw facts, because the problem is the intellectual lens through which they are viewing things. And if they say the original sin of the modern world is colonialism and white supremacy, then they make up a story in which a multicolored people returning to their ancestral homeland are somehow guilty of colonialism and multiculturalism. How do you, as student leaders, see any hope of fighting against this?
I think it starts with good leaders who are able to call out things for what they are.
Do you have them? Are you them?
I mean, I think the onus has to be on administrations. MIT wasn't able to say that calling for the genocide of Jews is a problem. So, no, they are not able to make bold statements to call out what is wrong is wrong. They're not able to do that.
By the way, it wasn't just that. I was really interested by the SNL skit because I watched it. They did the skit based on the famous hearing of Congress. I thought, this isn't funny. And it was not funny because they couldn't seem to pick a target. Were they making fun of the three presidents or at Elise Stefanik? Like, what was supposed to be the butt of the joke? And it seemed to me that even like within wider society, they hadn't clocked how completely crazy it was that what was going on. But as student activists, have your strategies changed since October 7th? How are you beginning to rethink what needs to be done to keep Jewish students safe on campus in a scary post-October 7th world?
I think building a stronger Jewish infrastructure on our schools to ensure that we can bring in more Jewish student leaders that are
educated. What do you
educated,
mean a stronger infrastructure?
Like strengthening our Hillels.
Okay.
And strengthening our Chabads and these systems where we can ensure that we can bring in more Jewish students who can then become student leaders and fight against the virulent anti-Semitism that, as you said, will always happen.
Because there are some people now who are saying, actually, Jewish students shouldn't apply for Harvard, shouldn't go to these elite institutions. Do you subscribe to that?
Absolutely not. We need to pack elite institutions with Jews.
Because I'm thinking of coming and doing a second master's. I was thinking maybe Harvard. Should I apply?
You know, I think it's disappointing because
it depends on the context. It's a yes or no question.
No, it's a very, I mean, it's very much a fair point. I think that when you look at the numbers.
Yes or no?
I mean, look, you're gonna have to let me explain the context, which is that when you look at, you know, the Harvard newspaper, the Harvard Crimson, does a survey every year of incoming students, and they ask for, you know, people's religious identification, and the number of Jewish students has pretty much gone down every year. In my year, it's only 5%, which is, you know, a pretty alarmingly low number. And I think that what makes it hard about this fight is, you know, I have a Hungarian friend at Harvard, right? And he tells me that in Hungary, you know, the anti-Semitism, you know, they're explicit, they're, you know, the anti-Semites identify as Nazis, right? It's
at
very easy.
At least they say it to your
right.
face.
At least they say it. Whereas here at these rallies, right?
Own it.
Right, they don't own it. And not only do they not own it, but they'll usually have a Jew. There's always at least one, maybe two Jews speaking at these rallies and saying, we actually are the ones fighting against anti-Semitism. So it's a very sort of, you know, mutating, I would say almost hard to identify or hard to actually identify to the world. What is this virus and what are we fighting?
I'm glad you mentioned that. How do you explain then the presence of so many Jewish students within the anti-Israel movement? I mean, we can talk about, you know, chickens for KFC. They are going and marching for an organization
that would gladly have them dead. And on October 7th, many of the residents of the kibbutzim in southern Israel, veteran peace activists who spent their weeks volunteering to drive Gazans from the Erez crossing to medical treatment inside Israel, none of it saved them when the Hamas death squads came in. Didn't save Vivian Silva when she was murdered and burned alive by Hamas, I think burned alive. It didn't save them. And do they not understand that they are marching for an organization that hates them and would gladly kill them if it got their hands on them? And why are there so many Jews who are putting on a talit and going through the whole performative theater of demanding a ceasefire that would leave Hamas in power and the hostages trapped in Gaza?
I think there are two points to make here. Number one is that there aren't really that many. I think there's a survey that reports that only 5% of Jews are anti-Zionist. What happens is, the reason we see so many of them is because these pro-Hamas protesters will find the Jew and be like, you're Jewish, you're an anti-Zionist, take the microphone. Tokenize yourself.
But they are a growing presence in your generation, which I find very disturbing. Your generation is that much older than me.
To the second point, they're applying a Western lens to a problem that is inherently not Western. They can't understand that Hamas wants to go and kill every Jew, and they think that they'd be spared.
You think it's genuinely a question that they don't understand that?
Yeah.
Is it not perhaps them thinking that as a survival strategy, it's easier to find safety in the hands of the mob, and maybe they won't notice them?
I mean, I think it's representative of a much larger problem. I mean, we know, you know, the numbers are, you know, pretty scary when you look at the numbers of students, you know, under 20 or under 30, right, who believe that Israel's an apartheid state, right? I mean, sometimes it's even approaching 50%. And, you know, I think that what it really comes down to is you have a lot of Jewish students who no longer actually view being Jewish as integral to who they are, right? I mean, their identity as, you know, I think we all care about being, right? We care about being Americans. We care about whatever views we have, right, on other issues. But I think that many of them are willing to actually put being Jewish to the side, especially when they look at the conflict. And I think that that's a larger issue that has not just to do with Israel, but with the future of American Jewry, too.
Let me ask a question. I hope it's not going to sound too mean. Right? Do you have friends? Like, outside the Jewish community, it's obvious to me that if we're going to launch a fight back against what is happening now, you need to build alliances. It's not just having a bigger Hillel, it's having joint events with other minorities, even not minorities. If you get the majority on board, that's fantastic. Do you have other groups that are sympathetic and you can work with to build partnerships beyond just Hillel and just the Jewish spaces?
It's difficult to find people and groups that would be willing to do that, because if you're not super involved in it, especially at MIT, we're normally a very apolitical school, so there's not many organizations that would care, really, besides the ones who are
involved. I mean, other minorities,
involved.
Like Asian students, Hispanic students,
they're all
black
signing
students.
On
there
to
was
the...
like an amazing historic alliance between Jews and the African-American community when it came to civil rights. Like, where are they? Why are they not on your side?
They're signing on to the statements that came out 2 days after October 7th that was pro-Hamas.
Do you see any groups on campus you can work? Christian students, I mean, who can you work with?
I will say, we recently had a BDS resolution entered into our student assembly. And this is also indicative of the broader mentality of just absolute terrorizing everything in your way. But it was just a complete disrespect to the shared governance system. These pro-Hamas students entered a completely anti-Israel resolution and destroyed the entire student assembly while doing so. And I think what's going to continue happening at campuses is SJP, Students for Justice in Palestine, and these pro-Hamas students are going to isolate the entire campus community that is somewhat rational by acting like the most irrational actors possible. Like, they're going into classrooms with megaphones and screaming Free Palestine. As a student that pays tuition, that's absurd.
So in terms of whether you think you have friends and allies who are going to actively join some pro-Israel, pro-Jewish movement, the answer is no. The answer is no?
The student assembly voted against the BDS resolution.
It voted against the BDS resolution.
So I think what's going to happen is people are going to start seeing.
But do you see groups that are you can build alliances with, or is the only hope for some pushback against this anti-Semitic, anti-Israel movement that they simply get on everyone's nerves until they say, okay, you've had enough. God knows I'm paying enough for this education. Please just shut up.
I think that what the issue is that I do believe that we have a silent majority, right? But the outspoken groups are the ones that are really sort of the most harsh. I mean, for an example, there's a group at Harvard called the African American Resistance Organization, and they call themselves militants. And they are one of the groups that released that cartoon with the Star of David and the dollar sign on it. And after we came out and criticized them, they apologized and they took it down. And they replaced it with a picture of another African-American leader who had said that the only good Zionist is a dead Zionist. So, you know, that is unfortunately what we're working with. But I believe that the majority of students, the majority of African-American students know this is wrong.
I believe that too. Are you seeing any signs of a pushback? October 7th has obviously changed everything for you. Has it changed things for the silent majority on campus? Is anyone getting fed up of this hysteria and insanity, or is everyone getting swept away with it? It's basically what I'm trying to ask.
I think people are getting fed up. I mean, there was a great moment at my convocation. They were trying to take a picture. The convocation is sort of the first event where all the students come when you start
your
time at Harvard.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah. This is actually before October 7th, and the photographer
was... Two people separated by a common language, as Winston Churchill said.
Exactly, yeah. And the photographer was trying to take a picture, and these Free Palestine protesters kept interrupting it and screaming. And at one point, a student who was standing in front of me, who was clearly not Jewish, said, "We get it. Do they want a free Palestine or something?" So, you know, he was voicing what I think that photographer was saying too, which was just let us take the picture.
Talia, are you seeing a pushback at Cornell?
Absolutely. I mean, students just want to go to their classes. And when they can't do so because of certain protesters, they are going to isolate themselves from the entire campus community. And what's going to end up happening is no one's going to associate with them anymore. And the administration is going to be forced to either kick them off of campus or take real action.
Maya, do you share that assessment at MIT? Eventually, people are just going to get fed up of the lunacy and tell them to pipe down?
I think so. I mean, they do the same thing. They come into classrooms and shout Free Palestine. They have this pledge where they will interrupt meetings and ask everyone to sign on, and they usually just get kicked out. MIT actually banned recently our anti-Israel group. Since then, there hasn't quite been a visible difference because they continue shouting and screaming, but you know, some progress.
Okay, before we wrap up, I want to ask you an admissions question. But this is an admissions question, not for Harvard. An admissions question for you back into American society. When you finish, you become full citizens, adults living in American society. I know sometimes at Harvard there's a question that gets asked in the admissions questions. How will the life experiences that shape who you are today enable you to contribute to Harvard? Now, I'm not interested in that. I want to know how the life experiences that shape who you are today will enable you to contribute back to America and back to the Jewish people when you finish your university studies. Maya.
I think throughout all of this, I think our Jewish community has become a lot stronger. I think a lot of us have learned that we have a moral obligation to stick up for our people. So I think that's definitely kind of a positive thing we'll all be taking with us in the real world.
Excellent answer. You're in. Talia.
I gained a really great appreciation for discourse. I found myself unable to have conversations and very much isolated. And when I do get those opportunities to sit with people on the other side and really see where they're coming from, understand their mindset, and then work together to progress to a place where we can both find some sort of agreement to be some of the most productive conversations I've had.
Excellent answer. You're also in. Charlie?
You know, I was talking to a professor at Harvard recently about the anti-Semitism problem, and what he said to me was, you know, I hear what you're saying, but I've spoken to many Jewish students who said anti-Semitism isn't a problem at all. You know, the truth is that I believe him, right? If you are not Israeli and not visibly Jewish and don't speak out for Israel, you could, my name is Charlie Kofit, right? I don't wear a kippah. I think I could probably go about my life without experiencing any issues at all.
And I think that, as you say, white passing.
Right, exactly. Yeah, and I think that, you know, we have a choice as the non-religious, non-Israeli students. either we can lean in and stand there with, you know, our Jewish brothers and sisters who are facing this, or we can just go about our lives. And I think what this has showed me is that it really is on us to lean in.
Yeah, and that's the only answer. Charlie, Talia, and Maya, thank you very much. And then we're on the course. And that brings us to the end of today's episode of State of the Nation, the first that we've ever filmed with a live studio audience on the road outside our regular studio in Tel Aviv. If you enjoy the podcast, please subscribe on YouTube, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever else you get your podcasts. I don't know what those other podcasts are, but that's always what they say. End of podcast is this. Thank you very much, and we'll see you in the next episode. Everyone, give our guests a round of applause. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Thank you.